This week, we're talking all about how to make poisons a little bit meatier and how to implement lingering injuries into your game in the best way possible. Welcome to We Speak Common. Hello and welcome to another episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. This is a show brought to you in partnership by The Dice Dungeon, who will be shipping me a copy of Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft very soon. I'm so excited. Actually, if you're listening to this episode today, that book is already out, so I will probably already have it in my hands. You can get a copy from them too, as well as all other D&D books and wonderful, beautifully crafted dice with new sets coming out all the time. Just head over to their website. There's a link in the description below. And of course, you can support the show and get 10% off your entire basket by using the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout. We're also supported by the incredible service known as Describe. Describe, spelled DSCRYB.com, is a website where if you aren't very good at creative writing, you can just go and use the professionals. They've got tons of people who are amazing at writing descriptions of spells, locations, creatures, monsters, all that kind of stuff, constantly writing amazing scenes to put into your home games. There's over 1,500 scenes available right now. It's always growing, and there are a ton available for free. If you want to go and have a look at them, head to the link in the description below from this episode. And if you want to subscribe and get access to all of those scenes and collections that are growing every week, then you can use the code COMMON for 10% off each month on your subscription. Of course, we're supported by the amazing Patreons who right now are feeling my love massively. I'll explain why in a minute. And if you want to support the show directly, that is the best way to do it. You get bonus stuff like the odd book and homebrew rule set and adventure that I put out here and there. But the main draw is the private community on Discord. We've got a server where we sit and chat and talk pretty much every day about D&D and other stuff too. So you can join us there as well if you want to support the show. Otherwise, just sharing us with your D&D friends is incredibly helpful. So I am on my own today. I was going to be joined by my lovely other half, Phoebe. We were planning to talk about, she's, believe it or not, getting into D&Ding, DMing in D&D. So she's starting to think about running her own adventures, and we were going to sit down and do a how to take any idea and make it an adventure episode, and I was going to help her do that. But as is the way in the world, my other microphone here in this room is broken, and I started to work out a workaround, and then we ran out of time. So the patrons are incredibly, incredibly feeling my love today, because their support means I can just go and buy another microphone, which I'm going to have to do within the next week or so. It's really annoying because I've been working on a secret project and I've been hearing little clicking noises in the background. I was like, what is that? Turns out it was that microphone on its way out. So if you're listening to something in the future and you hear some microphone annoyances, just know that I'm really sorry. But less of that needs to be said right now, because that's a long way off. So that episode will come in the near future, once I've got another microphone in, or once I've got a bit more time to, instead of having her in the same room with me, lock her in a dark room with her own laptop to record. In the meantime, I thought, well, it's a bit last minute and I need to record today, so I'm going to have to do one on my own. But I think I've got a pretty good topic to make up for it. Before we jump into that, a quick note on Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft. You're listening to this on a Thursday, which means that it is already out. That book is in the world. And I am planning on, I've got a physical copy on the way, but my wonderful friend at the table, who you will have heard on the episodes if you've listened before, James, he's grabbing a copy digitally, which means I can read it as soon as it releases. So I'm planning to get my nose into it, get through it as quickly as possible, get some thoughts in my brain, and then put a nice little episode together for you on the best ways to, the best things in there, the best things to use. So that might already be out. It might not. It depends how long it takes me to read and digest it all, considering the fact that I also start my new job this week. So I'm not making it easy on myself, but that is either coming or has just gone out, and you can listen to that at some point too. If you're thinking about picking up the book but haven't yet, don't worry. James and I are buying it so that you don't have to, so you can know what's in it first. So I will pass your thanks on to him for letting me get to it quicker than waiting for it to come in the post, because I just, I have a problem and I have to collect physical copies of books. So I had to get it physically. That's just how it is. But yes, that is coming. So if you're not sure, I know the contents page is out there on the internet now. And I was talking about it on the server with some guys who support the show. And one of the things that was said was that, oh, it looks like there aren't many pages on each domain. So is there actually a lot of info or not? Well, we won't know till it's out. I will have a look and let you know before you spend your money. So keep your eyes open for that. If it's not out yet, it will be coming within the next, well, this is Thursday you're listening to this, so I'll say by the end of the weekend, because it won't take me that long to read it and sit down and record. And who knows, I might grab Phoebe to jump in on that one too, because she loves a good horror game. Curse of Strahd was her, and Ravenloft in turn were her initiatives? That's the wrong word. Her initiations into D&D. That was the first campaign she played, so she's very excited for it too, and also why it's spurring her on to DM a bit, because she wants to go and DM a gothic horror campaign, which I'm very excited about. So we will do that. That is on the way. And the episode that I was going to record with Phoebe about taking any idea and making it a session, making it an adventure, that is going to come too, because I'm very excited to sit down and do that with Phoebe. So that will be here at some point in the next couple of weeks as well. One final thing, probably a good reason Phoebe's not here. We're both very ill, so if I sound a bit bunged up and if I'm sniffing through this episode, I apologize profusely. It's probably a good thing she's not here, because we would have both been doing it. So without further ado, there's a sniff for you. Let's jump into this topic. So Firestorm is a name you will have heard a couple of times. Great guy. Runs a play-by-post game for me, and over on the server we've got a topic suggestions channel. And he's put a topic in that I've been thinking about for the last couple of weeks. He popped it in a little while ago. So I have been thinking about this for a good few weeks, and I think I've got a good answer. He says, making poisoning mechanics in 5e more punishing / more realistic, and along that train of thought, how do you feel about severe damage like broken bones and long-term toxin exposure to go beyond the HP systems currently in 5e? Well, I love both of these things, and I think straight away, I think talking about them is a good thing. If you've got to the point where you're thinking about this stuff, you've got to the point in DMing or being in D&D, maybe you're a player who is an assassin who uses poisons, but you've got to that point where you've got a good enough understanding of the game that you're thinking, okay, how can I get more fun out of these mechanics that already exist? So I think this is a good conversation to have. This is one of those conversations, however, where there are two answers for both of these, and we're going to go into both of them today. So there's the answer where I tell you about, you know, 50 different homebrew resources. I give you links to DM Guild products and I say, hey, go and read these 5 books and then implement all of those 5 systems into your game and expect your players to use them too. And that's a good answer if you've got the time and the money potentially to, you know, bolster your game with supplements. That's what they are, aren't they? They're supplement rule systems. Whether they're homebrew or official or third party, it doesn't matter. They're supplemental rule systems and they can really enhance your game. So straight away, there are tons of these systems that already exist in the world. There are loads of free ones on Reddit where people talk about their different systems that have their own strengths and weaknesses. Some of them are great, some of them are terrible. There are books on DM's Guild. There are books from different editions that you can go and rip rules from. So if you want to go and do all that research, maybe spend a bit of money, and if you've got a party at your table who are willing to read those books too and understand those systems, then I think that is a great option for you, because you have so much freedom. It's going to take you time to find the systems you like, and you're going to have to do a lot of research. So that might not be what you want to do, but if you're up for that, I would tell you to go and do that. If you don't want to do that, if like me, you already have a bunch of supplemental rule systems in your game, you're not ready to add another yet, you don't really have the time to go and read a bunch of them, you just want to maybe make your own or tweak the D&D one, or maybe understand it a bit better, the 5e one, then that's what the second answer is. And I think I've got a good grip on how to give you that. So let's start with poisons, right? And let's do a bit of housekeeping. Poisons exist in D&D, and with every D&D, all 3 core D&D books, they're spread out all over the place, and they're not put in a good order together. But we'll start with the fact that you can get basic poison, that's what it's called, as an item for your characters, which lasts for a minute. You put it on a blade and it deals an extra 1d4 damage if the target fails a DC 10 con save, and it's good for 3 hits or 1 minute, whichever comes first. That is your level one, I'm an assassin and I've got poison item. Then there are other poisons that exist in the game. We'll get into those in a minute. And they come up in different adventures quite a lot. You can buy them. And it's my favorite thing because it gets me to say the thing I love to say, because no one does it. It means I can tell you to read the DMG because they are in there. No one reads the DMG. If you haven't picked up the Dungeon Master's Guide and actually read it, or if you haven't flicked through it in a long time, please do it. There is some good stuff in here. And I hate the fact that I used to tell people that the DMG was the last book you should buy. You should definitely be reading the DMG. It's a great book. So there's other poisons. And then, of course, there's the poison condition. Now, the poison condition is that you have disadvantage on ability checks and saving throws. That's it. The other time the poison comes up is on monster stat blocks. Now, I want to put a caveat in this. I've read some discussions online about, for example, the assassin stat block has wyvern poison, I think it is, and in the DMG it's like, well, wyvern poison is 500 gold pieces a dose, but the assassin has it on every single attack, so does that mean that they have ridiculous amounts of money? I think that in terms of this game, we need to separate the poisoning mechanics and poisons from monsters or creatures or combatants that you would fight, because sometimes you don't need to think about how the assassin has really expensive poisons. You just want them to have poison because they are an assassin and that's thematical. If you really want to get into the nitty-gritty, you're then, and into like how do they afford all that, you're then entering into the side of like, well, my assassin has to earn this much money, so he has to charge this much for his kills, which means that this person has to have this much money to charge him in the story, and it all becomes a bit convoluted. So suspension of disbelief is my opinion when it comes to that, but that's up to you and how you run your games. Neither is a bad way of doing it. So as it stands, let's say that your adventurers find some poison. Well, if we go to page 257 and 258 of the DMG, and I do have my my copy open in front of me because I'm going to be referring to it a lot, you will find the section on poisons. Now, poisons have 4 types. They are contact, ingested, inhaled, and injury. Contact means if it touches your skin, you are affected by it. Ingested means you've got to swallow a dose. Inhaled means you've got to breathe in a dose. And injury is the type of poison that you can put on a weapon, whether that's an arrow tip, a crossbow bolt tip, or a sword or a dagger or anything like that. There are some fun things here that I think people don't realize. For example, if you've got an inhaling poison that's a powder, so let's talk about the fact that maybe essence of ether. Let's say that that's an inhaled poison. So let's say that's a powder version of Essence of Ether, which is a type of poison. You could, as an action, as a player, if you are within melee range of a target, use your action to blow the powder into their face to cause them to make the con save. I've never had a player do that. That's cool. That's really cool. So first of all, have a read through these different types and their applications. They're only a paragraph each. They're enough to get your brain thinking as a player. Definitely, for example, if I had a gas poison, I'd be thinking about how I could set it up to fall off of the top of a door and break. Oh, there's the Discord server, if you heard that in the background. Let me just mute my computer because they're all gonna start talking. There we go. I'll talk to them later. What was I saying? Yeah, so that already gets me thinking about how I can utilize that in a different way as a player, and which is great fun for as a DM if you're setting up traps or if you're setting up maybe a chase scene. They're chasing after an assassin who uses poisons, and the assassin knows that they're going to come and check out their home, so they rig it with all these poisons and things. So read through those. But the poisons that they give, I think there's, how many are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 poisons. So that's a good amount. But these are also templates. You can improve these, change them, make up your own. Use them as a good basis to get your mind going. Now, this is where these differ from the basic poison. The basic poison in D&D only does an extra 1d4 damage. Once you're beyond fifth level, that's kind of not worth it. These are the next step, and they cost a lot of money. So, for example, let's have a look at the drow poison, which is a bit on the nose, isn't it? That's an injury poison. So it's typically made only by the drow and only in a place far removed from sunlight. So the point is that it's digging into the old drow stories of like Menzo Baranzan and Dritz's family and how they're all conniving. And if that's the story you want to tell with drow, then okay. I think it's good to maybe change that a bit, make drow poison. Maybe it's a drow poison because you can only get it deep in the Underdark and they're the only ones who know how to make it. That's a bit less on the nose about how, like, saying all drow are evil, but it's up to you. It depends on the story you're telling. That's what I would do. So a creature subjected to this poison must succeed on DC 13 constitution saving throw or be poisoned for 1 hour. Put a note in that. This poison gives you the poison condition. If the saving throw fails by 5 or more, the creature is also unconscious while poisoned. In this way, the creature wakes up if it takes damage or if another creature takes an action to shake it awake. So that's a situational kind of like, okay, drop you out of the fight poison. There is another one here, purple worm poison, which is a very, very powerful poison and very expensive. It's another injury one. It's harvested from purple worms where the dead were incapacitated. It's a DC 19. It deals 12d6. That's an average of 42 poison damage on a fail save, half as much on a successful one. This one doesn't give the poisoned condition. Put a pin in that. So there are these poisons listed in the DMG that do, if you're looking for that kind of, oh yeah, I want to be able to like stab someone and kill them straight away with one hit. Very hard to do if you're not an assassin, but if you want to boost that damage as a quote-unquote assassin, then this is a good way to do it. It's a very Jarlaxle-themed kind of way of fighting, right? His stat block in the Dragon Heist book has poisons on his daggers, I believe, on some of them. So that exists. And I think that the problem that I've seen is people asking, well, okay, how do I know if the poison give the poison condition? How do I know how many doses there are? How do I know when it runs off the blade, et cetera, et cetera? Like, is that purple worm poison only good for one stab? And I think that what people are missing here are the fact that 5e is kind of made to be up to you, right? And Joe and I've had this conversation before in the past when he was here more regularly about how he always wanted a rule and not the kind of, well, you know, work out as you go along. I don't think it's, in my opinion, work out as you go along. I think it's freedom to decide. And we should use these poisons kind of as we would with magic items. So think of it in terms of the fact that the standard basic poison in the player's handbook has 3 uses or it lasts a minute. Well, in that case, if my players were going to find some purple worm poison, which is an injury poison that goes on a weapon, I would tell them when they find it, there looks like there's enough for this many doses in here or this many uses. So you've got one dose of purple worm poison, which means you can put it on one weapon and it has one use because it's quite strong. Maybe they're really lucky and they find one dose that has 2 uses, then it's a stronger item. Think of that poison in terms of an item, a magic item, rather than just, well, it's poison. And I think that's where this has confused people. I think if poisons were listed in the magic item section, it would make more sense in our brains, like logically, be like, oh, that makes sense to be there. It has X many charges because you're basically using that same system. Whereas because it's in a later section of the DMG and it's kind of separate, it's left a bit more ambiguous. So I would use it that way. I would say when you're giving your players poisons, tell them how many doses it's got. Tell me how many uses it's got. How long does it last on the blade? All of this stuff is up to you. If you're running a game and you're giving your party purple worm poison, that's a very powerful poison, you know that that's going to give them a bump, right? That's going to give them a spike in their power because they're dealing on average 42 extra damage for that hit. If you think that they need or they should or could benefit from being able to do that twice for up to a minute, then great. If you think that they are strong enough that this would unbalance all your encounters that you've set up, then make it one-time use. You're the DM. You have that power. And I think that we need to be told that a lot more than we are. You can make that decision. Going back to the poison condition, there is some ambiguity in the way these are phrased as to whether the poisons give the poison condition. Some of them say outright, like the drow poison, a creature... Hang on, where is the sentence? Must pass the saving throw or be poisoned for an hour. That is the poison condition. For example, the purple worm poison doesn't say that, so it doesn't. A conversation I came up on online is when it says that someone is a poisoned creature. So for example, let's look at Malice, which is an inhaled poison. Creatures subjected to this poison must succeed a DC 15 constitution saving throw or become poisoned for an hour. That means you have the poison condition. If it doesn't say that, it might say the poisoned creature, which it does, because in this term it says the poisoned creature is blind. So if it didn't say becomes poisoned for an hour, but just said to the poisoned creature, I might consider that to be poisoned condition two. It because of the way that the wording works in 5e, they don't just straight up say you are given the poisoned condition. Because think of it in terms of, for example, the paralyzed condition. When something gives a person paralysis or the paralyzed condition, it doesn't say in the wording, you are given the paralyzed condition. It says the creature becomes paralyzed. So if it says something like that in the terms of poison, you get the poison condition. Most often than not, a poison will give the poisoned condition. It's just about making sure if it says the creature becomes poisoned, they have the condition and they have disadvantage on checks and saves. So with all of that said, with all that kind of lined out, because those were the main problems that I read on online, how do you make this more lethal? How do you increase it? So there are some lethal poisons in here in terms of, for example, high damage, the purple worm one. Or let's have a look at wyvern poison, okay? Must be harvested from a dead or incapacitated wyvern. A creature subjected to this poison makes a 15 constitution saving throw, taking 76 poison damage on a failed save, half as much damage on a successful one. They don't get the poisoned condition. Most of the injury poisons don't actually give the poison condition. They're just a way to buff damage. Now, if you wanted to make them a bit more poisony rather than just like an extra bit of hurt, then you could give the condition and give that person disadvantage on attacks, checks and abilities, attacks and abilities. Sorry. To give it more of that flavor, which I think would be a good way to make them feel a bit more realistic. Or you could start doing things like changing the poison condition. So here's a little homebrew rule I've been throwing around in my brain. If you want to make poisons a little bit more quote-unquote realistic or a bit more lengthy, give the poisoned condition a kind of state like the exhausted condition does. So let's say you fail your save, you get poisoned. Doesn't matter what the poison is, you now have the poison condition. Every poison has a chance, if you fail the save, to give you the poison condition. You start off with poisoned one. You have disadvantage on attacks and ability saves as the condition states rules is written right now. Then we put in a time limit. So let's say an hour goes by. If you haven't got rid of that condition by then, you make another save. And if you fail it, you get poison two, which in this sense could be something similar to maybe your speed is halved, right? Looking at the exhaustion rules, right? You're now becoming lethargic. Poison three an hour later could be your speed is zeroed. I mean, look, this depends on how strong and potent you want poisons to be in your game. And if they're becoming if they're a big part of your campaign, if they're a big focus of the story, then this might be a good system. So have a look at those exhausted conditions and try and make a poison variety. That would be one way to lengthen them out. And I think, to be honest, is probably the easiest. Do you know what? I'm actually going to, let me grab my PHB here and grab the old exhausted conditions. Let's lay them out here so that if you like this, you can just take it away and use it today. So exhausted has six levels and they are pretty similar. Okay, we could literally take the exhaustion condition and copy it if you wanted to be quick and easy and implement this in your game straight away. Okay, you've been poisoned, you failed your charisma saving throw, you have the poison condition, so you have disadvantage on ability checks and saving throws as per standard, which is right in front of me. So on the next page, poison creature, disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks. If you want the exhaustion sidebar, it's on 291 of the PHB. An hour later, you make the save again. You fail, your speed is halved. An hour later, you make the save again. Now for exhaustion, it's disadvantage on attack rolls and saving throws. You've already got attacks and ability checks, so let's throw saving throws in. So you now have a disadvantage on saving throws. An hour later, your hit point maximum is halved. An hour later, your speed is reduced to zero. An hour later, death. So you take the poison, you've got 6 hours and six saves, or you're going to die. That makes poison pretty damn dangerous and a bit more dynamic. Yeah, okay. You and I know that that's just a copy of the exhaustion rule. But in the moment, are your players going to know that? Probably not. They're probably going to go, oh God, this poison's really strong. What do I do? Well, you need to cure yourself. Now, poisons have a number of wave cures. Again, you are the DM. You can decide this. Maybe it's a greater restoration. Maybe it's something stronger. Does lay on hands work to cure poison? Does stuff like that that's easily available to the players get rid of it? Maybe for the weaker poisons, the ones that just blind you and give you the condition. Just blind you. I mean, blinding is pretty bad. But if you want to put in a really dangerous poison, like imagine it's the poison. I was going to give you a poison that kills people really well in the real world, but I don't know my poisons. But you know, maybe it's a really, really strong poison, and just casting magic on it doesn't make it work. Story wise, well, maybe it's extracted from a magical plant and therefore it's resistant to magic, and the only way to cure it is with an antidote. Then you've got a quest there to go and find the antidote. And I know someone will think, well, okay, well, why is this poison not running rampant in my world then? Well, then, simple. It's rare or it's expensive. Or both. Probably both. If it's rare, it would be expensive. Or it's just, you know, it's just really hard to find, or it's really hard to use. You've got to, like, make it a certain way. Now look, we're starting to edge into that point of creating homebrew rule systems and getting those third-party rule systems like I talked about at the beginning of the episode, because now you're thinking, well, what if people have to make the poison? Should there be rule sets for people, for players to make poisons? And should there be rule sets for players to make potions? Yeah. And look, I've used alchemy rule sets on my table. I don't love them. I don't hate them. They're just kind of a thing. They're an extra. And it goes into the side of harvesting creatures for items like carrion crawler poison, or carrion crawler mucus is one of the poisons in the DMG. And it's like, well, you have to harvest it. I mean, look, wyvern and purple worm, we've talked about both of those today, and both of those say they need to be harvested from a creature. But there's no rules for that in the DMG. Well, look, there are some amazing third-party rule sources out there on the DMG for harvesting. I've got them. James actually recommended one to me that he loves that I haven't read thoroughly into. Hang on, I'm going to pull it up from my on my phone, because I have my files on my phone, because I have to be able to get to all my D&D books at all times. Did you not know that? That he really loves. Here we go. It's the Hammond Harvesting Handbook. Yeah, Hammond Harvesting Handbook. It's downloading onto my phone so I can double check the title. But there's different there's like three volumes of this. There might even be more by now. So if you want to start, you know, expanding these rules with these kind of extras, then you can. They're out there. There's someone on DM's Guild who creates harvesting books for the monsters in adventures. So I'm running Tomb of Annihilation at the moment, and I've got a book that gives items or pelts and things that you can harvest from creatures. So when the players took down a zombie T-Rex and they said, oh, we want to get a tooth, I was like, okay, we'll make a nature check. And they got a 13. I was like, okay, well, you could probably get some teeth from this. You could also probably get enough pelt to make this much armor or this much shield, but it would take this many days to have it made, and you'd have to find someone to do it. And then they have to make a check to see how much they can harvest. And you can make that as complicated or as simple as you want. You can make it that they have to have harvester's tools. Do you see what I mean? Like, we're now lobbing on different rule sets. So you can get as deep into this as you want. But for me, to make poisons a bit more lethal, I'm just going to go back to the question to make sure the topic, to make sure I got the wording right. Making them more punishing, more realistic. Right. So to do it easily without buying any third party rule sets, I would use the exhaustion rule set, chuck that on top, make it quicker than exhaustion, because they're poisons and they're setting in and it's taking over your bloodstream. You know, you can make it as deadly as you want. You can only have 3 stages before death. You can have 6 before death. It's up to you. And then if you want to make it so they can't just be cured, chuck in an antidote that the players have to go find. That's my simple fix for poisons. That's how I would be able... I'm losing my words because I'm thinking about blowing my nose. Sorry. Let me do a really nasty sniff. Hang on. Oh, it's typical, right? The world starts to reopen and I get ill. That's how I would make poisons more punishing and more punchy for my session tomorrow. Right, that's the quick fix. The extensive fix is to go out and find those third-party rule sets and start to think about the other stuff. And there's so many of those out there, so many of them, that I can't recommend one because they're all different. They're all different, and you just have to go and find the one that you like. But if you don't want to get that intense, hey, here's a quick fix for you. Closing points on these. No going in. So tips, closing points, no going in how many doses and how many uses a poison has when you're giving it out. Here's one dose, you get 3 stabs out of it on your blade, or typically that only really counts for poisons that go on injury on blade. If it's an inhale or an ingest poison, it's usually you have to drink the whole dose, so you don't have to think about uses. Contact is the same. So think about that going in. Make the poisoned condition similar to the exhausted condition with your own set of levels based on how deadly you want it to be. And just have fun with it, I think. I think you don't need to overcomplicate this. I think adding those 2 things in, knowing the doses and the uses, and upping the condition like that is going to be enough to make them feel deadly. Because suddenly you're not just got disadvantage for an hour, you've got potentially 3 hours until you die, or at least 3 hours until your muscles start to seize from the poison and the toxins taking over. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that might be a little bit lackluster for some people, but for me, the simplicity in that makes it perfect. And as long as you know, as the DM, whether this is a poison that can be cured by Great Restoration or whether it can be cured by the heal spell, then you're good. And I think you set that based on your player's level. If they don't have access to Greater Restoration, but they're going to somewhere where they know it's deadly and they know there's traps, then it's their own fault if they get poisoned and they can't cure it, you know? So it just depends on the kind of level and table you're running for. But hey, you're a great DM. I trust you to make that judgment. Okay, my nose is really itchy. The tip of my nose is so itchy. I keep scratching it. I'm sorry if you can hear me doing that. So let's take a pause here to mention a couple of people that I would love to poison. Ben and Dave at the Dice Dungeon are really great guys, and I would love to slip a poison in their drink just to see the looks on their faces. They, of course, have been supporting We Speak Common for quite a while now. I think it's coming up to a year. I'll have to see if I can wrangle a giveaway out of them for a year's support. I'll have to ask very nicely and flutter my eyelashes. But they've got lots going on over at the Dice Dungeon right now, so much so that I don't know how much I can tell you about. But trust me, their stock is always evolving and always updating and getting new stuff in. So if you haven't been on the Dice Dungeon website recently, go and have a look. There's always a link in the description below. You can get 10% off your entire basket by using the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout. And of course, it's not just dice anymore. They've got spell cards, books, tons of other stuff. Go and have a look. It's great to see the guys just growing and expanding. And do you know what? I cannot wait for the world to open up properly, for there to be conventions, and for me to go and, well, for me to tell you that I'm going to go and harass them at a convention, because we've talked about it a few times. I'd love to do that with them. But hey, the world isn't in that way. One day in the future, hopefully I can see Ben and Dave in person and actually slip that poison into their drink. The other people who I would maybe not slip a poison into, because I feel like they'd see it coming and they'd describe it so beautifully, is Describe. DSCRYB.com. There you go. I had to think about it. They are the one-stop shop for creative writing. If you are not very good at writing those beautifully described scenes, or, you know, sometimes you can nail it out of the park. I did a session for Sam the other day and I smashed it. And other days you do a session and you think, God, I'm I'm really describing this like a child has drawn this scene and I've hung it on the fridge. So if you are in the latter group, or if you swap and change like I do, then they are the great service that is the one-stop shop for all those scenes written out for you. If you want to describe that amazing poison setting in and seizing your muscles tight and your heart beating and tightening in your chest, they've probably done it a lot better than I just did, because they have professional creative writers. Go to DSCRYB.com. Sorry, it's the cold. Describe.com, or follow the link in the description of this podcast episode. That's probably easier. You can look at loads of the free scenes right now. You can search through the entire database, but if you want access to all of them, that's over 1,500 scenes and growing, then you've got to grab a subscription. You can get 10% off with the code COMMON. And of course, there are the Patreons, who are honestly quickly becoming my favorite people in the world. We've got an amazing Discord server where myself and the patrons hang out pretty much every day. We're always talking. We share D&D news. We talk about our games. We share homebrew rules. Quite recently, Sam's been getting a good use out of it, because he's been writing little adventure hooks for his party, who are currently in like a big travel section of the campaign. And he will, for example, let's say, I don't want to say what he put on there in case one of his players is listening, but let's say, for example, he wanted to do an encounter with a mummy, right? A mummy lord. He's not. That's why I've picked it. He would go on there and be like, hey guys, you've stumbled across a mummy lord. How did you stumble across it? What did it, what condition was it in? And we'll all give him some little prompts, and then he'll use that to make his session. And we're all doing that for each other. So if you want to come and hang out with us, talk about D&D, talk about movies, talk about Critical Role and mechanics and fun stuff, then that is the main reward by supporting the show on Patreon. There are other stuff. There are extras, like a couple of books that you can get your hands on now, and more to come in the future. That is the best way to support the show. And it means that when stuff like today happens and my microphone breaks, I don't have to panic about buying a new one, because I can take a little bit of the Patreon budget and put it towards that. Because that's what it's there for, just to make sure I can keep things working and going and keep doing this. So my lovely patrons, I know you're listening. Thank you very, very much. And if you want to go and join, the link's in the description below. And of course, if not, that's fine too. Just sharing and talking about this show is incredibly helpful. Okay, let me flip the page of the DMG and go to the second part of this topic, which I'm super pumped for. So in chapter 9 of the Dungeon Master's Guide, I'm telling you, read this book. It's an incredible book. There is a section on, where is it? Here it is. Injuries, page 272 and 273. I'm just going to get rid of the player's handbook so I've got a bit of room. Luckily, my books are right behind me in my studio. So, Firestorm said, along the same thought, what about severe damage like broken bones and long-term toxin exposure? Toxin exposure, I feel like we've gone into a little bit with the poisoned, exhausted kind of thing, but we can touch on it a little bit. There is in the DMG on page 702 a section for injuries. Now I'm gonna read you the little chapter, the little paragraph, and then get into this and your other options. So damage normally leaves no lingering effects. This option introduces the potential for long-term injuries. It's up to you to decide when to check for a lingering injury. A creature might sustain a lingering injury under the following circumstances. If it takes a critical hit, if it drops to 0 hit points but isn't killed outright, and when it fails a death saving throw of 5 or more. To determine the nature of the injury, roll on the lingering injury table. This assumes a typical humanoid physiology, but you can adopt the results to creatures with different body types. I wouldn't roll. I would use a similar table and basically just pick the effects based on the circumstances of the injury. So if you get your arm broken or you get, I don't know, it's difficult because it's situational. So if a player describes how they want to stab someone in the arm, or if you describe them getting hurt in the arm and they've reached the threshold that you've set for a lingering injury, then you just describe it as the injury on the arm rather than just rolling randomly. So it's up to you, as they say, to decide when you want to use these. Gonna move the mic down a bit. I think I would use them sparingly. I don't want lingering injuries because it's kind of this thing of like the gritty realism. You could have them on every critical hit, but then they're going to become pretty standard because, yeah, critical hits don't happen all the time, but they do happen. There is much of a chance of you rolling a 20 on an attack roll than you would roll a 1. So sometimes you get lots, sometimes you don't. And I think that just makes it a bit, I was going to say predictable. That's not the right word. I just think it becomes a standard thing then, right? I think that you should use lingering injuries when the story calls for them. So rather than have a mechanical point that the injuries can happen, have it based on the story. If your player says to you, maybe you're on a roof chase, right? We're chasing after that assassin who's been stealing all the poisons we've just been talking about because he knows how powerful they are. And you leap off the roof, but you fail that saving throw, that acrobatics check, and you fall, right? You fall 40 feet to the floor. It's a tall building, right? You're in a palisade. That's 4d6 fall damage, which, yeah, it's not nice, is it? It's not great, but if you're a decent enough level, you can get up and keep going. Well, at that point, I might say, hey, roll a d20 for me and pick odd or even. And if they pick even and it lands on odd, well, they might have just broken their ankle. You know, like that's the kind of way I would use it. I don't know if I would use odd or even. That's just something that came to my head. But that's the kind of time I would use it. I wouldn't necessarily just have, oh, you hit 0 hit points, you get a lingering injury. I want it to be special. And I want it to be situational so that it's always different. You know, you're not always going to break your leg. You're not going to, for example, you could, if you use the rule as written in the book and use the table, they could fall off the roof. You could roll a d20 and they lose an eye, which would be very unlucky and it would be very gruesome. Yeah, you fall off the roof and you impale your head. That's not going to lose an eye. That's going to kill you, mate. So let's use it in the right way. Let's work out when they get the right injuries. So again, I think that's going to come down to you and your table. You can ask your table how often they want to be at risk of lingering injuries and things. For me, I would do it in a story where I'd say, hey guys, and I know that my table is very story driven. I'd say, hey guys, we'll start doing these. They potentially might happen. There'll be a chance every time. So for the falling off the roof, I might say, well, you failed your acrobatics checks to jump the roof. You're going to hit the floor. So no matter what, you're going to take 46 damage, but make me a dexterity saving throw and I'll set the DC. Whether at 40 feet, maybe it's a DC of 15. That's quite, I don't know, how easy is it to break a leg? 40 feet's quite high. So I'd set a relatively high DC. Whereas if they were falling from 20 feet, I might set a DC of 10, you know? And then they're just unlucky. So that's how I would use it. But let's have a look at some of these injuries. So lose an eye, you have disadvantage on wisdom perception checks that rely on sight and on ranged attack rolls. Magic such as the regenerate spell can restore the lost eye. If you have no eyes left after sustaining this injury, you're blinded. Seems pretty logical, right? Lose an arm or a hand, you can no longer hold anything with two hands. You can hold only a single object at a time. Magic such as the regenerate spell can restore the lost appendage. See, these are lingering injuries, but it's not like they're not fixable. You can't not get your hand back because we live in a world of magic. So remember that. And also, I'd like to add that there are tons of rules. I think Xanathar's and Tasha's. No, Tasha's has it, I think. The magical prosthetic arm, right? How cool is that as a character development? You lose a hand and then you, six sessions later, you from dungeon crawling, six sessions later, you go and buy a magical arm. And then maybe when you're level 16, you find someone powerful enough or you have enough money to have the regenerate spell cast. Like, that's an interesting long character story arc that is only going to really detriment the player for as long as until they find a solution. And it's on the player to find a solution. That's what D&D is, right? That I would love to be in that situation as a player. For example, in Tomb of Annihilation, there are some traps that might make you cut your hand off. Right? You put your hand in the wall, you press the button, and then a blade comes down. I will make my players lose their hands in that situation. That kind of fits with the campaign because it's a very deadly, kind of unforgiving campaign in that way. But also, you know, I will say to them, hey, yeah, your hand's been cut off. Doesn't mean you're never going to have a hand again. You just got to fix it. So that's how I would use it. What else have we got? Foot or leg. Your speed on foot is halved and you must use a cane or crutch to move unless you have a peg leg or other prosthesis. You fall prone after using the dash action. You have disadvantage on dexterity checks made to balance. Magic such as the regenerate spell can restore the lost appendage. That one's quite good. Not good. Quite bad for the player, but it's like that's a good bad one. Limp, your speed on foot is reduced by 5 feet. You must make a DC 10 dex save after you make the dash action. If you fail the save, you fall prone. Magical healing removes the limp. Internal injury, whenever you attempt an action in combat, you must make a DC 15 constitution saving throw. On a failed save, you lose your action and can't use reactions until the start of your next turn. The injury heals if you receive magical healing or if you spend 10 days doing nothing but resting, which can work well if you want to have some more gritty, realistic resting rules, which is another topic. Broken rib, same effect as internal injury, except the DC save is 10. Horrible scar, you're disfigured to the extent that the wound can't be easily concealed. You have disadvantage on charisma persuasion checks and advantage on charisma intimidation checks. That's cool. A magical healing of 6th level or higher, such as heal and regenerate, removes the scar. So upcast. No, wait, is heal 6th level? No. I don't know. Either way. Festering wound, your hit point maximum is reduced by 1 every 24 hours. The wound persists. If your maximum hit point drops to 0, you die. The wound heals if you regenerate magical healing. Alternatively, someone can tend to the wound and make a DC 15 wisdom medicine check once every 24 hours. After 10 successes, the wound heals. That's a long one. And then minor scar, the scar doesn't have any adverse effect. It has healing of 6th level or higher, such as the heal or regenerate removes the scar. So that's just if you want a cool scar. So these are some suggestions. And again, like with the poisons, you can make your own. I would probably use limp or something like limp, or something between a mix of limp and lose a foot for a broken leg. So maybe you break your leg, your speed is halved until you get a prosthesis. And if you dash, you fall over. You have disadvantage on dex checks to keep your balance. Yeah, I'd probably use the lose a foot or leg one if a player had a broken leg. Broken arm, it could probably, yeah, you would use the lose an arm or hand because it's basically lost. You can't use it. It's broken. It's just not cut off your body. So these can be reskinned into that, and I think they're great ways of doing that. In terms of in combat, if you wanted to use lingering injuries in combat, I think you could link them up to critical hits. You could, but again, I think that would be too often. You could link them up to if the player is, I was going to say unconscious, but they're already taking death saves then. Maybe if the player is unconscious and they take a hit, they take a lingering injury, because then they can't, they can't defend themselves at all. So if you get stabbed while you're on the ground, like, yeah, you're going to take 2 failed death saves. Now, that heightens the chance that you're going to die, right? But we know our players, they might not die. So if they don't, they then have a lingering injury. But that might feel like you're adding insult to injury, pardon the pun, to your players. So this is, again, is going to depend on your table. If they want to have a chance of taking these injuries on critical hits, then great, because they can use those too. They can implement those on the creatures that they're fighting. So you're just going to have to check with the table and ask them. But I would still use them in situations where, you know, if you fall off a roof, well, how bad did you fall? Did you fail that dex save by 10, in which case you've broken a leg, or did you only fail it by 5? Or did you only fail it by the amount that you, you know, you just failed it, less than 10, well, then you only broken a rib. It's going to be up to you, but these are the ways I would use them. There is a section here that says, instead of using the effect described on the table, you can put the responsibility of representing a character's lingering injury in the hands of the player. Again, talk to the player, let them know. The other option that kind of goes along with this is the massive damage rule. Now, this is... they say it's a rule to make it easier for a creature to be felled by massive damage. So when a creature takes damage from a single source equal to or greater than half its hit point maximum, it must succeed a 15 constitution saving throw or suffer a random effect determined by the roll on the system shock table. For example, a creature that has a hit point maximum of 30 must make the constitution save if it takes 15 or more damage from a single source. So this is for when you crit, and you really hit hard, like when a paladin burns their smite at 6th level and really hurts the creature, then they roll to see whether they take an extra effect, which again could be nice. You could implement that rule as the way of putting in the lingering injuries, or you could have both. It's up to you. The effects, it's a d10 table, there's only 5 effects. It's if you roll a 1, the creature drops to 0 hit points. If you roll a 2 or a 3, they drop to 0 hit points, but they're stable. Side note, someone said to me the other day, oh, these are creatures, they don't take death saving throws. They can, if you want, and that's kind of what this is saying. And I would definitely use that. My creatures make death saving throws, because if they are humanoids, and let's say it's a party versus party conflict, they can bring the other party up. The other players can the other characters... Let me rephrase this. The NPCs can help get their friends back up, like the players can get other players up. That's the right way of saying it. 4 or 5, the creature is stunned until the end of its next turn. It's always good. 6 or 7, the creature can't take reactions and has disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks until the end of its turn. 8 or 10, the creature can't take reactions until the end of its next turn. So it's just like being hit really hard around the head, basically. You're going to get a varying degree of effect based on how hard you're hit. And that can be a nice thing to put in. My only thing to think about when putting this in is stuff like, how much is it going to affect the flow of combat at your table? Players have abilities to, for example, the monk can stun creatures. The paladins can already do a lot of damage by smiting. So you've got to think about the fact that, well, if I put in this massive damage rule, or if I put in the lingering injuries and it happens when they take a certain amount of damage, can that really be abused too much? Not abused, but can it get used more than you want it to be, because the players can already deal a lot of damage? You've got to really think about, this is the thing. There's always that cop-out answer. It's going to depend on your game and your table. If you're playing a tier 1 game of levels 1 to 5, and it's a high damage rule, massive damage rule, then it's not going to come in as much as if you're playing, you know, a tier 3 game, levels 10 to 15. So just think about that, putting it in. But yeah, I mean, I really love these things, and I will be using them, and I they are in the back of my mind, but it's that thing of like, the DMG has, what, 300 pages in it? You got to go back and remember what's in there, because you're going to forget it from time to time. But you should definitely have a look at poisons and lingering injuries. And I think if you're going to take one of these away, the one I'd want you to take away is lingering injuries, because I think they add a lot of character development opportunities, especially with, oh, you've lost an arm. Now you have to go and, well, first of all, you have to do something to it, make a medicine check to stop yourself from hurting. And 2, you now have to work out how you're going to operate without a hand. And then 3, you're going to have to work out whether you're going to try and get a prosthetic, or whether you're going to go and try and regenerate it and pay for that money. So it just adds extra hooks for your players. And a little bit of that risk reward consequence, like we were talking about last week. So there's that. I hope that's answered the question. I'd love to hear other people's thoughts on this. I know that there are people who will want more and will want to throw in gritty realism on top and throw on, you know, like a countdown for how long you have until you bleed out from losing an arm on a lingering injury, or you know, there might be people who say, well, okay, I've broken my arm, my character's broken their arm, I can't get a regenerate spell going, so how long does it take to fix it? Well, let's say, how long does it take to fix an arm in real life? 3 months. Like, that's a long time. That's a long time, and the players will probably find a way to heal it magically before that time passes. But if not, like, I know people will want those tables. They'll want all of those rules written down. I say you don't need that. You can just go for the flow, go with the flow, in the sense that you don't know when a player's going to break their arm or leg, so work it out when it gets to it. That you might say that they only break their ankle and that only takes a month to heal. You might say they break their femur if you want to get that intense, and it takes 6 months or something stupid and they can't walk. So that stuff, I think I have to leave down to you. And I don't always think that giving you a table to follow to the letter is always the right thing, but I will encourage you to go and read those rules and use them and just slightly tweak them for your table and your games. But yeah, I don't think there is a bad thing. I don't think you get a negative from adding these to your games. I think that the poisons is an easy one because it's just adding a version of exhaustion, just slightly tweaked. All you have to do, take 10 minutes to sit down and work out how deadly you want poisons to be and write those levels of poisoned condition. And then the injuries is just working out how and when you're going to implement them. Run it by your players, make sure they're happy. And if they are, start using them. And it's that easy. Cool. Well, look, I don't think I've got anything else to say other than I want to hear your thoughts. So as ever, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, the Discord channel if you are a Patreon, or if you want to join the Patreon, contact me on there, tell me, or email me and let me know, how would you use these systems? Are you already using them? If you are using them, what are the things that you've learned? What are the things that you think need to be changed? What's the stuff that I've missed? Is there anything that I haven't said that you've found by using these in your game for a long period of time? Because I haven't been doing this, but I'm going to start doing it. So, you know, I might learn that in a few weeks' time. We'll see. But let me know. WeSpeakCommon@hotmail.com is the email. WeSpeakCommon.com is the website, which will take you to a list of everywhere you can find us, Twitter, Instagram. If you see someone post about WeSpeakCommon on Reddit, it's probably me. We don't have groupies. And if you want to join the Patreon, links in the description below. You can get to me on there. Cool. I'm going to let you go and read these sections for yourself. Get your head around them and use them. Do it. And I will catch you, hopefully, if it's not out already, in a couple of days, or if it is out and you haven't listened to it, in the next 5 minutes, if you go and listen to it soon, when we talk about Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft, as it releases in a matter of days. 2 days it releases. I'm recording on the 2nd. So I will read it, and then we will talk about it. Have a great rest of your day. I hope the next D&D session you play is really fun, and someone breaks an arm. In the game, not in real life. And thanks for putting up with the sniffing from the illness. All right, see you later. Thanks for listening today. If you like the show, do us a favor, leave us a like and review on your platform of choice, and share us with your friends. Send us to your fellow DMs and players so that we can build our community even more. It really helps to get us out in front of more eyes. If you want to support the show, you can by joining our Patreon. Links can be found in the show description and the episode descriptions on all platforms. The music in the podcast is Street Dancing by Timecrawler82. It's licensed under a Creative Commons license by NC. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.